All right, I think we have just about a half hour left, and I think that time is probably best used just to open it up for questions and comments on any of the things that we've heard. So far, I know there have been, I think it seemed as if there were some people that wanted to say things or had questions about the presentations, and we can use this time, I think, most usefully to address some of those things.
I just have a quick question, which is, you know, when you say a position is 90% research, I mean, for me, in thinking about all the work that the NLA Community and Information Technology is doing, is what counts as research? I mean, does it require then that it be a published book or a series of published articles, or can it be sort of a set of things that have been done on teams? You know, what counts as research for promotion is
right.
The question, and I'm wondering if, you know, we've got these nice figures of how many percent research is in this position. I'm just wondering, is the research the same?
It doesn't have to be the same. It can be all of the things that you mentioned. It can be having your own digital project. It can be serving on a research team. It can be publication. It can be making presentations. All of those things count for the research professors.
And John, when you're talking about having, can you turn off the thing again?
Yeah.
I think that also goes with professional development for undergraduates. So if undergraduates have more opportunities, I'm actually thinking of graduate students, if they have more opportunities for professional development that shows them the kind of work they can do in an alt-ac setting, then they feel more confident about not going on the tenure track. So I think that all clearly it's a chicken or egg.
Yeah, but one of the reasons, you know, going back to the conversation from early in the day, one of the reasons we want to be careful, I think, about making invidious distinctions between different kinds of work is, you know, we don't want to, at least I don't want to sort of reincarnate that, you know, in another level of job distinctions. You know, I would like to acknowledge that there's all kinds of interesting, useful, credible things that you can do in this environment.
Right.
And, you know, a fraction of it, and it is a shrinking fraction, is, you know, the tenured assistant faculty.
Right.
It was just related to this question about library settings that you are kind of on. Are all the folks here who are from library settings, are they actually an information school? So, or is it, okay, because I mean, I wonder if that's if there are different kinds of distinctions in a library that's connected to a school of library information science versus not. I mean, in terms of getting faculty respect, you might want to turn it off.
Some libraries have professional librarians who are tenured faculty, and they're in the faculty ranks. Certainly most have a dean of libraries or a university librarian or a college librarian who has some sort of academic appointment, although not all clearly in your cases. There's a middle ground where you have faculty status, but it's not tenured. So at UVA, I was on a faculty line, and it had a promotional track, it just wasn't a tenured.
Assistant librarian, associate librarian. No, that's still in place, and you produce a packet that looks for all the world.
And one difference, perhaps, is that you can usually stay at any of those levels wherever you wish. And then there are others like Dartmouth. When I moved to Dartmouth, I gave up a faculty status. There's no faculty status anywhere other than in the teaching and research faculty. So it's all over the map. And for weird and wonderful historical paths that have got us to where we are.
I hate to be a pain in the ass, but
really?
But I'm going to be. No, actually, I'd love to be there. You're right.
Should they turn off the sound again?
I still feel like this discussion of whether it's tenured faculty in the library, tenured faculty in the departments, or untenured faculty in the library, or untenured faculty in the departments, is still talking about this 10% maybe of people working in digital humanities. That still the vast majority of people who are doing digital humanities labor are not going to be in the position of having a track where you are promoted through these ranks, that there's still going to be those people who are working in, you know, we at my university we call them classified staff mm-hmm. positions. And so what does this discussion do for them? You know, I mean, at our center, let's say we've got 10, you know, 50 people, 10 of them have PhDs and are in some kind of faculty position that, you know, in my case, untenured research faculty position, and, you know, Dan Cohen's case, tenured faculty position, who have, there's some kind of track like that. But the rest of the people, they're not going to have those jobs. It's not like the university is going to give us another 40 faculty positions, even if they're research faculty positions. So what can we do for those 40 people?
But I think there might be some models for this emerging. And I mentioned the HR restructuring in UVA before, and that's because we're a state school too, and had classified, so you had basically two sets of, maybe three, you know, tenured and tenure track faculty, academic faculty, a big set of non-tenure track faculty, and then classified yeah. staff. And so part of the restructuring has been permission from the state to sort of step away from the classified staff system and create our own system. So those are university staff, and that's why many of the current non-tenure track faculty positions are being converted over to university staff, and many people in classified positions are moving to that. It's a this system is empowering UVA to completely rethink its HR paths and to try to create career paths for people. Who would have just sort of naturally fallen into those classified staff positions, which were really unproductively defined. You might be an IT Spec 1, and you could be an IT Spec 2,
right.
and an IT Spec 3.
That's what we've got.
Yeah, right. So,
UVA, not George Mason, where you can convince the General Assembly to throw away the classified system.
We're still figuring it out, but it's you know, we're having a lot of really healthy conversations,
yeah.
particularly around... Now, we're not calling it digital humanities, we're calling it hybrid hybrid academic technologists or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the positions that require a person to have deep experience in an academic discipline, but also real technical skills, and where your work would be evaluated differently.
I guess what I'm saying is I just hope that's where our conversation is aiming. Like it's that
mm-hmm.
that's aiming in that at that
mm-hmm.
in that direction rather than at the, you know, this conversation about, you know, pathways for, you know, people with fancy degrees from fancy schools. I just worry about, you know, like, you know, we're talking about how we all get ahead, and that's not. I just don't know if that's
mm-hmm.
what we really are here to talk about.
I know that's where the University of South Carolina wants to go. I don't know that we'll get there. We're bound to the state's labyrinth, its jungle of HR classifications. And the university leadership, the administration has repeatedly said that they'd like to get us away from that because they find it really counterproductive. So we'll see. In the meantime, it's not a career path, but there are ad hoc things you do. I mean, for example, our programmer came in with an MA in computer science. We immediately got her to enroll in the PhD program and are paying her tuition so that her coursework and her work for the Center for Digital Humanities overlap to a great extent. Her research profile over there is basically the grade standard that she does for us.
I wonder if it would be useful to tease out two different meanings of tenure in this particular context, because I think tenure importantly means job security in a certain sense. I mean, that's an important contrast.
Mm-hmm.
That I know Tom has had a lot on his mind today, and I know I have as well. I mean, for many digital humanities practitioners, workers, and so forth, the thing that is most significantly lacking from our jobs is the sense of job security, both because of the reliance on soft money or on temporary project trajectories, and also because of the lack of runway space, I mean, the sort of lack of upward mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think tenure also means being licensed to do a certain kind of work, and I think that was a meaning that was very much present in the original draft of the white paper, right? The
mm-hmm.
idea that jobs will be constructed to valorize research, whatever that means, and to aim us in the direction of being a certain kind of professional that's modeled on the way the tenured faculty member is intellectually modeled and the way their work is imagined and coded culturally. And both of those things have real value, but they aren't equivalent, and they don't depend on one another. And it would be useful, I think, to decouple them for purposes of thinking about where we're aiming.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
So decouple them, tenure and job security?
Well, decouple job security and cultural value.
Respect.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
That's,
yeah.
I sort of said that, like, you know, why do people want tenure? Well, they want tenure because they want job security and because they want respect. So we should talk about the best. So rather than talking about, you know, particular career trajectories and path, I just feel like we should be talking about how we give the people who we work with respect and security. Let's think about the values rather than think about the words or the classifications or the, you know, let's how can we.
But not just respect and security, because if you decouple, if you de-synonymize also tenure and promotion, which, you know, I think you were trying to get us to do early on, respect and security and the runway,
yeah,
you know, and
the
way
answer.
And a way for it to
yeah.
advance
okay. Yeah.
Right. is a third thing.
Well, I throw a fourth in,
okay.
and that is academic freedom,
yeah.
and you know,
sure.
sort of the an intellectual property. Because I think that's for me really where the rubber hits the road, is to look up on the policy level at the university to see how people in differing employment classifications are treated with regard to academic freedom and their ability to, for instance, open source their work if they would like to. That sort of thing.
I just feel like we're backing into it, like where we let's talk about the values that we want to, you know, instill our staff members' positions with, and then come up with models that pushes in the direction of those values, rather than coming up with models and then saying, okay, how can we twist these
yeah,
to
yeah.
get them to
such
work,
ways.
You know, for
exactly.
these values?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I do think, I mean, so when I think about respect and job security in relation to tenure, and I guess the conversation, you know, inevitably has come back to tenure only as a point of departure, but yeah, you know, the job security still seems very real, and it seems to me, you know, unless I do something that is completely outrageous or probably illegal, my job at the University of Maryland is secure as long as there's a University of Maryland. But in terms of respect, in terms of material gain, for example, in the form of salary, even in terms of academic freedom, yeah, I think we want to be careful not to overly idealize and fetishize those things with respect to tenure. Do I have academic freedom? Sure, but a lot of my work is driven, I think, in response to the kind of tactical decision-making that Neil was talking about earlier in the context of how MIF runs as a center. So what I work on is always a sort of give and take and compromise between what I'm interested in and what might be good for the organization I'm involved in. Salary, ask anyone who's been promoted in my department recently what kind of salary bump they've gotten along with their job security. It's small to non-existent.
They lose
$5,000. In the society we live in, calling somebody a professor borders on the pejorative. You see it
but
in our political campaign. So yeah, my point is
yeah.
simply that I think both of those are values that we want to instill, but let's not model respect on a kind of Mr. Chips version of
yeah.
what tenure was.
And there's one other really critical part of that conversation is building these kinds of paths for digital humanists in the academy, it also has to happen outside the academy. I mean, our employees are better served when there's a market externally that they can use to leverage a career for themselves, right? There is no reason, outside the academy, if you work in a role a digital humanist would have, you don't have intellectual property rights. I mean, and nobody who works in it is even under the illusion that you have intellectual property rights.
Mm-hmm.
Not that that means we're absolved from that. But what it does suggest is there is an outside world that is our context. And I think building those careers, our digital humanist should be able to go out into that world.
And that outside world pays a lot better, right? And, like, I mean, there's a lot of other things. I mean, I think you're comparing two very different things. Like, industry is its own thing, but we're talking about the academic context.
The outside world includes small design shops. The outside world includes small software development shops. Mm-hmm. Those folks don't get paid, at least in the upper Midwest, don't get paid appreciably better, if at all, in many cases, than folks who work in a university, even a poorly paying university.
They often,
like mine.
Yeah, they also often don't collaborate closely on a day-to-day and equal basis with people who are able to assert intellectual property rights over their
I disagree. They're working all the time at the very cutting edge of design and work with people who've commissioned work that they're thinking about selling or making.
Right, but people who commission work make the difference. Mm-hmm. I think what I'm trying to say is that that if you have somebody classified as a staff member and somebody classified as a faculty member who are working as equal partners on a project, one of those people, typically within digital humanities centers now, will have the right to source the work, to share it, to talk about it, to take it forward. The other person has done work for hire and has no such rights over it. And that's often problematic.
I wonder if the intellectual property thing, though, like, is in some ways a bit of a red herring. Just in that, like, as property, what we produce is not terribly valuable. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's not like there's lots of money to be made, even on something as, you know, as successful as Zotero.
Yeah.
Right, so it's not about intellectual property, it's about credit. Like, people should be able to take credit.
Well, credit and to be able to take it forward in some way.
Sure,
yes. Continue development.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right, right. So it's, it's tied with intellectual property, but it's less, I think, about, you know, strong ownership of something and more about kind of social ownership.
Well, and it's again, I think that runway of respect and sort of a future. I think it's very disheartening to be in a position along, you know, trucking alongside someone who you think is a co-equal, and you hit this wall, and they have, like, there is a community of hope and aspiration for new tenure track hires. There's a lot of hope. They're colleagues. They're going to come in. There's this perception that they're going to be there for a long time. And that it's an establishment of a community.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to be someone who comes into a job where it's clearly there's an end, and you know you're not going to be in that job for very long. And that is a really disheartening lack of respect. So I think that runway aspect is the respect here. Whether it's because you can follow through with copyright,
mm-hmm.
or whether you can follow through with some other aspect, it's that follow through that gives you the respect.
There's also another material dimension to this that we haven't even talked about. Mm-hmm. And if we're really talking about people who have the option, well, I could be a tenure track faculty member, but I prefer not to, and I'd rather do this. I know from my own experience in such cases that the people who are not the tenure track faculty member, but the person in the DA center, wonders, when do I get my sabbatical?
Right.
Why don't I have my summers off to do my research?
I've been wondering that myself.
Yeah. Me too, actually. Do you really get the summers off?
But you know, though, I think that's a sort of trope that I hear a lot in DH circles of, well, you know, faculty don't really have it all that great either, you know, and if you look at all, and I think, okay, that's probably true, but then why aren't there floods of faculty flooding to the non-faculty ALDAC position? I mean, if that was actually the case, if it was truly the fact that they're basically co-equal, and in fact, the ALDAC might have it better, then I would expect that we would see a lot of people saying, well, I don't need this tenure track thing anymore, I'm going to go into the better ALDAC world. But we don't see that. We do see people trying to break into the faculty world.
Right. I kind of want to get back to. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Just make a quick point. There's another subtler dimension to the point that you were making, Bethany, about ownership, which is that for some of the ALDAC people, the way their job is constructed, they are in effect a quantifiable resource, and the person who allocates their labor does so, in some sense, consulting them, but in another sense, driven by imperatives that aren't up to the person whose labor is being allocated. And you become a kind of fractional person over and over again. And that's a very, very significant difference from the way academic labor in the faculty sense is apportioned. I mean, and it feels very different, even just in the way that you have to track your time and things like that. And it's not that there aren't analogs on the faculty side, but I think it's it does make a big difference.
I think Julie's just finger on the biggest issue here really is who gets to set the agenda.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you know, there really is in academia a glass ceiling at a certain point where leadership in the institution is going to be provided by people who have faculty status. And the direction is going to be set by people who have faculty status. And that seems to me the one thing that across lots of different kinds of universities, across lots of different institutions, is consistent, and it's the consistent distinguishing feature. And what it comes down to on a day-to-day basis is exactly what Julia's talking about.
Yeah.
Who gets to decide what your job is?
Could we maybe turn the thing off for a second?
Yeah.
I guess, I mean...
We ended the conversation earlier on doing these kind of buckets, these models, and I think that's clearly right. Like, that kind of model should be in these other models as they are. The document I shared with everyone, and I've sort of been adding to the buckets, and I added another one because we don't have models for systems of promotion. That wasn't really in there. And it looks as though it's not necessarily, maybe it is professional development, but it sounds like it's a little bit different. And it is going to be different for the various models of work that are going on in the departments, or in the centers. And so tomorrow is pretty much open-ended. We did that for a reason, to make it so that we can decide what tomorrow's going to look like today. But we've run out of time. We have an idea about, I think we're all in a happy place about this sort of, what you were saying, I think is pretty much where we all are, where we start with the values and then we end up sort of looking at models that reflect those values. And I think tomorrow when we come back, we should really think hard about how we can work tomorrow to, whether as a group or in small groups, to really nail down what some of those values are and some models that must be included to represent those values that would be useful for all the, you know, the different kinds of audiences we've been talking about, whether it's administrators, whether it's, you know, these sort of, all of these words we've been throwing around today and all these different kinds of examples of the kind of work and labor that goes on in centers. Does anyone have any sort of last remarks about this process, or do we want to sort of stop, let our brains kind of massage over it, and we'll reevaluate in the morning and see how we want to move forward?
I think the necessities of time and such force us to do that.